Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the location, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are what? Never dull. Today, we have Marty Winder Adams. And we're going to talk about divorce and coaching, but from a negotiation and a mediator's position. Everything doesn't have to be ugly, brains. You can consciously uncouple. Nobody's going to get everything. Everybody's not going to win. And you don't want to destroy the children and the foundation that you've built. If you are smart and you are strategic, after you get over the emotion, you'll be able to work out a deal. And so Marty is going to help us figure that out. I know it's a lot to process, you know, but you got to get out your feelings, or you're going to mess everything up and probably end up with nothing. Okay? So let's welcome her to the edge. How are you, Marty?
I'm great. And thank you so much for this, April.
I'm so glad to have you. You know, I can just thank my lucky stars that I've been married 37 years to a magnificent man. But you know what? We had this conversation before we even got married. I said, look, if things don't work out, you take one chair, I take one chair. I'm not going to argue and fight with you. Because people change their minds, their situations change, their health changes. They consciously uncouple. So you went into this divorce mediation. How did you get into that field?
It's kind of interesting. I was, at the time when I started this, back in the late 1990s, I actually was married myself. Things were, you know, good. Everything was going well. And I started doing a lot of mediation. I was working in Canada as a teacher and got involved in some of the teachers are unionized there. So got involved in some of the labor management kind of negotiations, got fascinated with it, decided I'm going to become a mediator. Got really passionate about the family mediation side because I saw as a teacher the effects it was having on kids in the classroom. And I taught the little ones. So I noticed a lot of, you know, kids that were just devastated by mom and dad's ongoing conflict. And yep. sometimes April, the divorce was over 5 years ago and the fighting was still as intense.
Still intense.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and mom had moved on and had a new partner and dad had a new partner and they were still not able to resolve the differences. And it's the kids that were caught in the middle. So that got me passionate about the family divorce side or family mediation side. And then I went through my own divorce. Now, I did not have children, thank goodness. So that was easier because there wasn't that issue to deal with. And it wasn't a great divorce. It was just one of those things where there was no willingness to work together. And so to try to resolve
it. Even with no children, there was a big kerfuffle.
There was. Yeah. And I think there's going to be, because it is an emotional thing. And maybe that wasn't dealt with as well as it could have been. And I mean, we eventually separated and divorced and everything is fine. There's no issues ongoing, but it kind of made me stop and think, why is this so tough? Why is this so difficult? So I started working a lot with people that were in high conflict divorces. And what I found out is not all high conflict divorces started out that way. A lot of times they started out where people were kind of like, okay, you go your way, I'll go my way. And then a bunch of little decisions that started mounting up during that separation phase created this sense of they're out to get me, I'm going to get mine before they get mine. And all those kind of anticipatory
things. You know, and I say this with love and respect to attorneys, but they, you know, they uncover and discover a lot of things where there's been hidden money or there's another piece of property or whatever. So they can add fuel to the fire.
Yeah. And their job is to represent you as a aggressively, I'm going to use that word because I think that's the one that attorneys would use, but that they are there to represent you in the divorce in your best interest. And so if they uncover something that your spouse has got hidden, that's good. That's what they're supposed to be doing. But that's where the, you're right, that's where the conflict really gets going. Or people lie and say,
well,
you know,
I don't lie, you know, but it's also a control issue. Because if you're a woman that has been scorned by the secretary or by someone 20 years younger, you're bitter.
Yeah.
And so, you know what? You're going to pull out all the stops. If I can't have him, then you're not going to have him. You're not going to lay up in that beach house that I worked for and decorated and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of control and manipulation.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, when people say, look, this is not working, let's divorce. What are some of the things that they should really consider in a civil conversation?
Well, the first thing is that really what you want to do? Or is that what seems like a good idea right now because we're at a rough patch in our relationship? I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to who are into legal fees for $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, and then have decided, you know, maybe we really should have attempted a reconciliation, or maybe we should have gone to therapy, or maybe. And then they almost feel like, well, we're this far into the divorce. Should we try to go backwards and reconnect, or should we keep going forwards? So I always tell people first, number one, make sure that that's really what you want to do. Number two, I think you have to come up with a way to talk to your spouse about it, especially if you don't think your spouse is on the same page. So how are you going to have that conversation? How are you going to frame it? You know, if I walk into the room and just yell, that's it, I'm getting a divorce, that's going to be received one way. Whereas if I sit down and say, look, this is not working. I don't see us staying together, but I want this to be a fair and equitable decision that we both have input on. So we both walk away from this and feel like, you know, we got the best out of a bad situation. That's a whole different approach. So how are you going to have that conversation? What about the kids? If there are children involved, how are you going to talk to the kids about it? Ideally, should be mom and dad together sitting down and talking to the kids, and definitely not saying we're getting a divorce because it's that person's problem. That should never be part of that conversation. And then even simple things like who's going to stay in the house, or are you both going to stay in the house?
They're doing that. My girlfriend and her husband, she's got the upstairs, he's got the downstairs. When I'm through with you, baby, I want you out of the house. I don't want to be looking at you and your girlfriend or whatever. And the dynamics of relationships are so different now.
Yeah. And I think, April, you really hit on something. I mean, there's divorces where people mutually literally say, this isn't working. We don't hate each other. We just don't want to be married anymore. It's just not working.
Right.
That's one whole kind of divorce. Then there is the kind that's an affair, or somebody's got an addiction, or somebody's got a mental health problem, or somebody's just totally destroying everything in life because they're so unhappy with their, you know, with their relationship or their life. So there's different categories of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people who are divorced and do holidays together.
Oh yeah. They co-parent.
You know,
because they're at that mature stage. What is that song by Sting? If you love somebody, set them free.
Yeah.
Love them enough to let them go. But there's that, again, that control. There's the emotion. There's the money.
Yeah.
Women, I'd like to talk to you for a minute. Okay. We love and we love hard. Me personally, I don't want nobody that don't want me. If it doesn't work, after I get over the initial shock, you know, all that. I don't need to talk to the girlfriend. I don't need to know every nano detail. I know that there's just something that this person has found with someone else. And that's not indicative of you. That doesn't mean that you're a bad person. That doesn't mean that you're unloving. That doesn't mean you're not sexy. That just means that their attention or their reasoning has drifted another kind of way. But before you even get to that point, before you even get married, you need to do some data collecting. I know I did, and I had a good old come to mama talk. Me and my mother sat down and talked about some of the things that happened. You know, you want to look and see if somebody's got bad credit. You want to look at their behaviors. Do you see patterns of narcissism or alcoholism or drugism? You know, are you willing to be a blended family if they have kids? And what is that going to entail? Because you know you have to deal with the spouse of the other person. And then incorporating those children into the family. What are you willing to take? Then when you have your own children, how are they going to feel? It's so many contributing factors. And a prenup. You know, I know some people that said that the prenup was the best thing they ever did because it outlined what their assets were, not what you're going to get in the event of a divorce, but what you come in with. What do you think about those things, Marty?
Oh, no, I think you're spot on. And I think, you know, that's one of the things when I work with women, I don't do the post-divorce stuff. Like I don't do the how to find a new partner after the divorce. But I know one of the things I always talk to people about, I say, now, what lessons did you learn from this? What are you going to do differently the next time around? Because most people are going to go on to have at least another relationship. And the scary thing is that 50% of all people that divorce are going to remarry in the first year. They haven't even dealt with the emotional issues of the divorce. And I mean, I literally have worked with people who I know there's people that listen to you from all over the world. So this isn't the same in every place. But, you know, in the States, in most states, you can't marry for 30 days after your divorce. But I literally have people that are sitting there waiting for that 30-day mark to come up because they're planning their next wedding. And I'm just, you know, okay, maybe you were having an affair when the relationship was going on. But you are not. And your kids are not in a place. If you have children, those kids haven't even grieved the loss of the family unit that they were born into, let alone now bringing a new partner in. So,
and the statistics, the statistics on the divorce of the second marriage is higher than the divorce of the first marriage.
It is.
Again, because you have unresolved issues.
Right. And it's that blend. A lot of it is that blended family that you talked about, because most people have their own set way they want to parent their kids. And if you have two newlyweds in a home with different parenting styles, there's going to be problems. It's a recipe for...
It's going to be problems.
Yeah.
Or if there's, you know, if there's jealousy, or if you're with a player, you know, it could be a female or a male. Yes. They just like the company of a lot of people.
Right.
And so your children are looking at this, and this is a part of epigenetics. Intergenerational trauma. Mm-hmm. It sets it up. How did my parents resolve conflict? How do they handle money? How do they handle us? You know, a lot of times people are naive. Oh, the children don't know. Believe me, if they live in the house, they know everything because they're in the house when the other spouse isn't there. They're there when you're arguing, and they're there when they're talking to their brothers and sisters.
Right.
What do you suggest that people do when talking to their children about divorce?
Like I said, and I think I mentioned this earlier, so I think it's really important that if mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad, or whatever the relationship happens to be, if both parents can sit down and talk to the children and say, mom and dad have decided that this is the best thing for us, and we want to make it the best thing for you. So we're going to work with you to make sure that you have lots of time with mom or dad and lots of time with the other parent. We're going to support you in this, and we're going to keep working as your mom and dad. That's really important for kids to hear that message. The other thing I think it's really important is that parents need to, like you said, no fighting in front of the kids. Literally, if you have to just grit your teeth and put on that fake smile, do it. What the last thing you want to do is have that blowout argument in front of your kids, because it traumatizes children. It really is. It really does.
It traumatizes the parents too. Yeah, kids are really smart. They hear everything that's going on. They know what's going on. And then they have other friends. Yeah, my mom and dad had a divorce and this is what happened. And, you know, that can lead to drug abuse. That can lead to them shutting down completely. That can cause them to run away.
Yeah.
So you really want to take the child into consideration and extract your own personal feelings. Have those adult conversations away from them. So I totally get what you're saying. Also, looking at the dynamics of negotiation. What are you willing to concede? What are you willing to lose? Everybody's not going to win. So in your mind, once you level up and, you know, mature, should I say level out and mature, you know, are you willing to give up the summer house? Are you willing to sell the property and the proceeds? You may have to move. What impact is that going to have on the children? New school, new environment, new home. All these things are things that you would bring to a negotiator like Marty, correct?
Right. Yes. And that's the, I've got to say that. That is the thing that I see people are the least prepared for is divorce mediation. They go in there, and this can be men or women, even whether they've got an attorney with them or not. They typically go in there and kind of like, well, let's see what, you know, let's see what we can get out of this. If you don't do your research, it's just like I deal with lots of business professionals, and I say to them, would you go into a major contract negotiation and not know what your bottom line and your ultimate want out of that contract is, and know that you've got to settle somewhere between that low point and that high point? I get so many people who come into a divorce mediation and like, well, I'm going to see what they offer and then I'll evaluate that. You cannot go through a mediation like that, because you walk out, you'll make decisions that you regret. And then once it's in the divorce decree, you're stuck with it. It's there. And if you choose not to follow it, then you get the post-divorce legal action that they come after you for things, for breach of contract, breach of a civil agreement. So you have to know where your top line, you have to know where your bottom line, you have to be able to control your emotions in that room. And you also have to be ready to, like you said, give a little bit. I encourage every person I work with, and I only work with women, but I encourage women when they go into divorce mediation, don't even think about winning. Think about getting what you need, not what you want, getting what you need out of that settlement. And then if you get a few things you want, that's like icing on the cake. But you got to know that what you have to walk out of that with to be able to restructure your life, rebuild your life, keep going with your life, or like you say, plan for your future. But if you don't know what that line is, you've already lost when you walk in the door.
And you know what? Know what's going on in your household. My mother taught me that too. My mother said, you know what? There's women that don't know what's in the bank account, don't know how many bank accounts there are. They've never paid the mortgage. They've been a kept woman the whole time. I'm not knocking that. But not knowing the important things. What if your spouse passes away or gets disabled? Yeah. That's equally as devastating as a divorce. If there's hidden assets, if there's foreign assets, if there's stocks, there's bonds, their 401k, their pension, on both sides. Men should know that on their as for their wife, as the wife should know for their spouse.
Right. And I'll tell you, one of the big ones that I'm running into a lot, both with my coaching and with the mediation, is cryptocurrency wallets.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because if you know, they're not a tangible asset, right? So how do you deal with cryptocurrency? How do you deal with like Bitcoin holdings, because that can be a ton of money. How do you even evaluate that? Because the market goes from, you know, $1 million to $5. Not quite that, but you know,
it has. I get it.
So how does the court even evaluate that? You know, that if it was $230 when you bought it, but it's $30,000 now, what's the actual value of this asset? Because it doesn't stabilize.
Right.
Of these things, what do they call them? NFTs now, where you can buy electronic versions blockchain versions of art and things like that.
Oh, I know. Someone tried to get me on that blockchain of buildings and this whole virtual world. That's different.
Yeah. So how do you evaluate that? And how do you even know if your spouse has one of those? Only one person can have access to that wallet, right? It's individual. It's not designed to be open, and it's really hard to find that stuff out. So there's so many things. Like, that's the other thing that I see a lot now is, what about all your digital assets on your computer? All the pictures of your kids on your phone, all your social media stuff. If you don't have a way to protect that, what happens if your spouse or your partner in anger goes in and deletes everything? All the pictures of your kids just to hurt you. People do things like that.
People come up out the ground.
Yeah.
They do all kinds of stuff to hurt you and stalk you and just instead of just letting you go, just letting you go. So, all right. So now let's talk about the rebuild. Let's talk about the come up. Where do you start after you signed on the dotted line that we're no longer married?
Well, here's my advice. This is what I think is the really valuable point that gets missed in when you're not working with somebody who's looking kind of at the big picture of divorce. So your attorney's looking at your legal stuff. You're looking at your day-to-day stuff. Maybe you've got a therapist to help you out that's looking at your mental health stuff. But who's looking at where do you really want to be in the future? And here's what I see the problem is. People don't start planning for their future until after the divorce because they just want to get through the divorce and then they'll plan for their future. But if they don't know where they want to go, how do they know what's right for them to get out of the divorce? What they actually need? Right. So I think that planning for the future really needs to start in conjunction with the separation and divorce. And I think the rebuild is really rediscovering yourself, maybe investing a little bit in some kind of program to help you really get centered. What do you want to do? Where do you need to go forward? What do you want to focus in? Most of the people I work with are business executives. Do they really want to continue being CEOs of major companies, or have they always wanted to be an entrepreneur, or are they an entrepreneur and they'd like to go back to the corporate world, or do they want to do something else in entrepreneurial space? So I see divorce as a transition. And that's why I call myself a divorce transition coach, because I don't see it as an end. It's a pivot point. And I like to tell
people. It's a new awakening. It is. Yeah. It's a rite of passage.
It is. Think of it as when you're a little kid and it's like, what do I want to be when I grow up? That's kind of what I see divorce as. It's sort of like that reset point where you can make some big changes if you want. And I think people should be inspired and motivated to do that and not feel like, oh man, I've gone through a divorce. You know, I failed in my personal life. I hate that. You didn't fail in your personal life. Just like you talked about at the beginning, it's something that happens. So
then it happens.
What do you want to do next?
But maturity.
Yeah.
And grabbing hold to that. And you said something that was very important too, your mental health, because it will drive you cuckoo crazy. You know, you're doing all of these things to try to cut the other person down when you could be using that energy to lift yourself up.
That is so powerful. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know?
So let's talk about some things about you. What did you do to reinvent yourself after you consciously uncoupled?
Well, the first thing that I did is I decided to pursue more active work as a mediator. I was working as a teacher then. And so I started doing a lot more mediation. I also took a wonderful holiday where I went away. I did some time for myself. I really focused on what I wanted to do and sort of some just getting rid of some of the stress and some of the things that had been going on. I mean, my divorce didn't drag on. I work with people who have been through in the divorce process for 3 years.
Oh, come on. Really?
And hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal fees. I didn't have anything like that. I mean, mine was over within six to eight months. It wasn't a huge long thing. But still, it was nice to just decompress. So just give yourself that time and space. And that's what I did. And then I really got motivated into working specifically with women to help them get prepared. So I started doing a lot of work on teaching women negotiation strategies, how to prepare. Then I got into some of the mindset stuff, which was, I wouldn't have seen myself in my 20s doing that kind of thing, but really enjoyed that. And then started doing coaching. And I've kind of been in slowly switching to the coaching stage over about the last 10 years. So I'm just about 100% there.
Are you married now?
I am not. I've remarried after my divorce. And my husband passed away in 2017 after a massive stroke and 8 years where I was his caregiver. So that was another time where I kind of went through a pivot. And that's when I really was able to focus on my coaching. So
how did you re-engage and begin to trust love again after a divorce?
I did a lot of the stuff that you talked about. So I took my time. First of all, it wasn't anything that was like kind of like a big rush. The next thing I did is I really thought about what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be with and kind of what that person was going to be like. And then I kind of took a leap because I was living in Canada. I came down here to the United States where my husband was. So I switched countries at the same
Well,
time.
that's a
So,
lot.
but it was kind of nice because it really was a whole new place. Like there wasn't this sense of, you know, you're in the same community, small communities. I've always lived in smaller communities and, you know, everybody knows everybody's stuff. So it was nice to get a fresh start.
Exactly.
Yeah. And just really be able to focus on what where my passions were. And my husband was very supportive of that. So that was really nice.
Brains, male or female, don't bombard your new love interest with old baggage from your previous relationship. You are such a Debbie Downer. I would not pay for your cocktails because it's a new experience. You can say, hey, I went through this. You can have that conversation, but every time you meet a new suitor, your calling card or your introduction is contingent upon the trauma or what my ex did. Oh, this is my ex, and this is, I've seen people that have showed their new person pictures of your spouse cheating on them. That lets them clearly know that you're not over it. And until you are over it and you have found love for yourself and you're grounded, want to take your time. Now, I'm not saying, don't date, don't go out and, have drinks, maybe even bump uglies. I'm not saying don't do any of that. But what I am saying is be responsible and love thyself first, because you can't give to somebody else if you're not together.
And I think the other thing, April, just to kind of add a little more on that, I think it's perfectly okay for people to not want to date. I don't think that people should feel, you know, I have to say between after my divorce and my marriage to my next husband, my second husband, it wasn't, nobody pushed me for that. But since since my husband passed away in 2017, I am starting to get friends who are very well-meaning, but you know, like, hey, are you getting out into the dating world
Right.
yet? And I'm like, no, and I don't want to. And I think it's okay for people, you know, to take a while. There's nothing wrong with that. And you shouldn't feel that there's this pressure that if you're not in a relationship, there's something missing in your life. I get so frustrated with that because that's not true. People can be very comfortable with who they are and what they're doing and have a lot of really meaningful relationships that just aren't, you know, marital or intimate in nature. And it doesn't really matter. As long as you're happy, do it.
What are some of the strangest things that you've had to help people negotiate through? I know people that will fight you tooth and nail for the dog, for
Yep.
the bird, for their baseball cards. What are some of the strangest things that you've had to negotiate?
Well, I have to tell you one, and this is I got to give you a little bit of background, but it won't be very much. I had a very wealthy couple. They had a custom leather couch built for their custom home, and the way the couch was made, they had to have it put in before the home, like, so they put it in and then kind of built that room around the couch because of the shape and the size, and it was all one piece. And when they went through the divorce, neither one of them would either give up the couch or give up the house. So eventually, what they agreed upon doing was hiring a contractor to literally cut a side out of this room, get a crane in there to move the couch out, and a semi truck to haul this couch to the next house where the same procedure was done to re. You know, I don't know how much money that cost them when all the smoke had cleared, but
Wow.
they either but that was just a you know that was just a they were going to try to outthink each other, and it just ended up costing them a ton of money.
Wow.
I've had people that have we've negotiated family businesses where, interestingly enough, husband and wife owned family businesses where the husband and wife divorced but stayed business partners. So that was an interesting one. And by the way, they're doing very well, and they are one of the, I think last year or the year before, They were one of the Forbes 1000 companies. So wow. They're, I mean, they're definitely, they can work better as business partners than they could as spouses.
They can.
Lots of ones with dogs and cats and horses and stuff. I'm trying to think of what else. Oh, I've had ones where people will agree on everything. Like it's a huge estate. They've dealt with millions of dollars. Everything has gone back and forth. Everything is fine. But then it's something crazy like a coffee maker that was given to them on their as a wedding gift from somebody's relative. And that becomes the sticking point to the whole negotiation. And I'm just like, here's $30. Let's go to Walmart and buy another coffee maker.
It would be that simple. Can you explain to us what is a dissolution of marriage versus a divorce?
I think that's a legal question. So I'm not sure that there is a difference in most states. So I'm not sure if I'm okay. Stating that right. So I want to be really cautious because
I'm not an attorney either, but I think it might be a timeline.
I know like there's like if you go through like an annulment, that's something different. That's, you know, that's the marriage basically never happened. I know that some areas call it like the marriage is dissolved or there's a dissolution of the marriage, or some people call it the divorce. I'm honestly, April, I would not, I'm not really sure.
Okay. So tell me some of the success stories that you've had with clients that you've worked with after the fact.
I have had people that have come to me literally not able to function, just mm-hmm. unable to make decisions, overwhelmed, feeling that their attorneys were even against them, not knowing what to do, and working with them, giving them that space to think about ideas, ask them those questions to help them identify what they really want to do, where they're able to go into mediations or through collaborative law practices and say, hey, I'm okay with this. I made a decision. I know I did it right, and I've got no regrets. So I think that's the best story. I've had clients that, and it's interesting that we were talking about hidden assets, where the husband had said that he had had the property assessed. They had multiple properties. And I said, well, would it be a value to you for your peace of mind to just have somebody else assess them? And she goes, you know, I think I'd kind of like to have that done. And she went and had her own real estate appraisal done. $175,000 difference between what one and the other. So I think for me, though, it's when people can walk out of the divorce and say, I made the best decisions given the information I had at the time. I'm not emotionally going to carry this. I don't feel any guilt. I don't feel any sense of shame or that it was my fault. I'm able to go through this. And I'm even willing to look at having an okay relationship with that other person.
Exactly.
Or I'm willing to, I respect them as my child's other parent, and I'm going to support them to be that person in my child's life forever. And we're going to get through this. And when
we can sign the documents and go our separate ways, and I don't ever have to see you, speak to you, or anything else, and be okay with it.
And but let it go. Yeah.
That constant combustion.
Yeah.
That constant fighting is doing nothing but destroying you and destroying your soul. And as long as you invest all your energy in that, nothing good is going to come to you. Be it another spouse, be it peace of mind, you're going to get wrinkles.
Yeah. You are.
You're going to gain weight. You might have a heart attack. You might have a stroke. And then along those same lines, I have seen people that have gotten divorced, and when they've gotten disabled, their former spouse has been their caregiver.
Yes.
So it's all about love and trying to find that. If it's self-love or physical love. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're doing right now, how to get in contact with you, and what you're doing with business women outside of the divorce arena.
The easiest way to get, like, I'll try to do that not in the right order.
Don't worry about it. We got you.
Because I'll forget about that. The easiest way to get hold of me for the divorce stuff is just the website is www.divorcecoachforwomen, and that's the number four. So divorcecoachforwomen.com. And there is a handy dandy guide for how to hire a divorce attorney that is there for people to just go ahead and download if you would like to have it. And I also offer a free divorce strategy session. So it's about 30 minutes and we can talk about a particular problem you're having and see if we can't help get you off on the right foot on that one. Mm-hmm. the work I do with women executives, it's interesting because a lot of it started because, well, I was an executive coach, and then so many of the women that I worked with as an executive coach were actually going through divorce. But I do executive coaching. So I work with women. I'm certified in emotional intelligence assessments. So we do a lot of work on emotional intelligence, team building, conflict resolution, communication styles, and helping women navigate the really difficult role of being a woman in a corporate or entrepreneurial role, because things have changed a lot now, you know, and it's not easier for women, surprisingly. You would think it would be, but it's not. And so how can you be honest to who you are and have that sense of value and integrity that you bring to your personal life, but also be able to provide that same sense of alignment with your values and stuff in your professional life? And there are ways to do it. You don't have to be, don't want to use any bad language here, but you don't have to be a witch and go in there and yell and scream and tell everybody what they need to do. There's nothing wrong with being, you know, kind and compassionate, but you do have to have that inner strength, and you do have to find ways to, if you're going to be in the corporate role, you know, as most of the women I work with already know, you can't be a pushover. You have to be, you can be empathetic, but you can't be unbalanced in how you approach things.
You have to be able to make a decision. You have to be able to close a deal. You need to be able to have the tough conversations. You need to hire where you're weak. You need to watch the bottom line, you know, and you need someone, everybody needs a coach. And you need a team. You can't do all this. If you're an entrepreneur, you still need people on your team. You still need resources. And you need to be aware of the DEI space, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yes.
That's
absolutely
huge right now. We have everybody coming at us, you know, with all these different pronouns, with, you know, disabilities, abilities, challenges, mental health, you know, childcare. Look at all these people that are emotionally damaged after this COVID fiasco. People are still trying to unthaw from that. So great people like Marty is exactly what you need. Have the consultation, brings, have the conversation. She is a leader in the industry. And you know, she's talked about some big money people. She's not talking about chump change. If you're ready to level up, because money is energy, if you are ready to think and grow rich, if you are ready to just really have the quality of life that you've been missing out on, then consult with someone that's going to hold your hand and walk you through the process. She's been there. She's got templates of many other people. And I just think that you are absolutely amazing. I do, because this is a niche. This is a niche, and this is a gift to be able to coach someone. I've had other types of very unusual and different type of coaching. And it takes a lot, because it's a lot on you too. You know, what do you do to decompress? What do you do to just get all of this off of you and say, you know what, maybe I'll go out and scuba dive? What do you do for fun?
Well, I have to tell you, I live on a farm in Texas. Ooh. So, and I have horses. So that is my thing. I get outside. I do it every day. Not today, because it's actually not that nice out today. Most days I'm outside with animals. That's really relaxing for me. I do a lot of walking. I try to walk every morning. And at the ripe young age of 55, I started doing yoga. So I love yoga now.
I know, it's addicting. It's addicting.
It is.
And people think, oh, it's all about the limb, you know, your body being limber. No, it's about connecting with the breath.
It is.
It's about connecting with the source. Source energy. Whatever your source is, know that there is something higher and superior to you. And trust me, if you trust in that, the person that you're separating from will be a no-brainer. You won't even think about it, because you'll be so into yourself, looking good, feeling good. You're going to draw that type of energy to you. Thank you so much for being here on the Edge. Let me find my postcard so folks can remember where they are. This is where you got the information, right here on the Edge. And I want to toast to you, Marty Adams. Okay.
Thank you, April. It was wonderful being here. I loved it.
It was wonderful being here with you too. And we're gonna continue to share these types of information and interviews, brains, because it's things that we need to know. We just want to be nice people. We just want to get through life and be as pleasant as we possibly can. So thank you so much again, Marty. I'll talk to you soon.
To April. Bye-bye.
All right, bye, brains.